You're listening to WRFI Watkins Glen, Ithaca. We're at 88.1 FM in Ithaca, 91.9 in Watkins Glen, and this is Eric Clay and the Made of Clay Report, digging deeper into the issues that make and break our lives, and doing it with a bit of a chuckle this morning, as we have as our guest, Howard Lieb, a local, a relative newbie to Ithaca in the last few years. Good morning, Howard.
Good morning, Eric. Nice to be here.
And good to have you, and also many
good
of you.
Good to be had.
Well... Yes, and we will be hearing more of that as we go along. And how did you when you were running against Jim Seward in the state Senate election? Did you get much humor in along the campaign trail?
As much as possible. Before we start with assumptions, I start from the assumption that nobody in the audience even knows I did that. Among the other things I've done in the last election cycle, I ran against a 13-term incumbent, because that's how dumb I am, and for New York State Senate here. I ran as the Democratic and Working Family Party candidate, and Jim Seward has been in Albany now for about 27 years, and yes, I used humor as much as I could on the trail. It's a wonderful thing in debates because people don't know what to do with it when you get people laughing. Right. But when people laugh, they listen, and when they listen, they think. So it's a good tool to use.
Yes, yes. And when we had an exchange getting ready for this show today, I mentioned Will Rogers, and you said you'd known a little bit about him. But Will Rogers was the last humorist who really had access to all economic strata and many cultural or racial groups in this country as a respected humorist. Since then, most people have taken a segment or a smaller band of a smaller bandwidth. Will Rogers is credited with having sold the New Deal to a conservative public doing what FDR couldn't because of his humor.
He's also the one who said, "I don't belong to an organized party, I'm a Democrat."
That's exactly right.
A line I have used many, many times over the years. I'm thinking about your statement. I mean, I think there are a lot of comedians over the years who've had, access to various economic strata, and George Carlin comes to mind, Richard Pryor comes to mind. I'm granted they started at a certain level.
And they dismissed rural America for the most part, and while that's only maybe 20% of the population, that's a significant demographic to kind of to miss. And that's
country comedy is a separate subgenre. Justin Wilson, Jerry Clower, George Kennedy. He's an actor. The guy who played George Lindsay. That's who. And yes, that is a separate group, but there's still different economic strata, mm-hmm. As opposed, I would say, different socio strata.
Right. 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 No. And yeah. But I was just trying to point out that there was his reach was pretty much across the board.
Yeah, there are a few things more boring to an audience than talking intellectually about comedy.
But that's true, yes. Well, I didn't mean to go quite down that
me,
path
not
so
you,
far. But anyway, and to rattle off the names and to know what you know on the fly is impressive. Anyway, so what I want to do is just, can you tell me a bit about yourself?
Sure.
Part of this show is for us to get to know the lives of people in the area and some of their passions and some of their interests.
I appreciate that. I also should let the audience know I will be taking over Mission Radio on alternate Fridays, and I view this as a chance for audiences to start to get to know me here on WRFI, because I'll be around for a while. One of the things you usually have when you do radio is a guest shows up, you hear 15 minutes with them, and then you never know what happens to them again. I'll be around for a while.
Right.
I am an attorney. I am an educator. I am a political activist, specifically in the area of voter rights. I am a husband with a wonderful wife, and I am, for most of my life, a resident of New York City and its environs. I grew up I was born in Queens. At age 11, I was kidnapped to the suburbs by my parents, who held me there for 7 years until I escaped and went to college back in the city.
And not just the suburbs on Long Island. They kidnapped you all the way to Westchester.
Oh, no, you say that like it's more extreme. I consider Westchester the more civilized of the suburbs. I view it as at least it wasn't Long Island.
Okay.
But now that I've offended certain portions of your audience, and went back to the city for... college and for law school, lived there most of my life, moved back to Queens, and then about, well, it's probably coming on 4 years ago at this point, my now wife, and my fiance, was born up here. This is where she is from. I met her when she was in college, living in the city. And we came back up here for family reasons. Mm-hmm. And it was an adjustment. It was different than anything I had worked with before. My wife has said to me that the fact that my family has relatives in a house in Maine helped. And she's probably right. I've been going to Maine since I'm 0 years old. But it is an interesting place. I have learned to love farmers markets and enjoy cleaner air and being able to see stars in the sky. And I have tried to become part of the community. Mm-hmm. WRFI is part of that.
Yes.
Running for state senate was part of that. I am an entertainment and intellectual property lawyer. I may be the only entertainment lawyer in the Finger Lakes area. I looked it up and I haven't found anybody else. But my practice is international. I teach online, which makes it easy. I can teach from anywhere. I teach for National Paralegal College and Kaplan University and Kaplan Test Prep. And it's a nice place to be. Mm-hmm. This is now my home. And as it being my home, I want to be part of it and have it be part of me.
Right. Right. And given your work, you could be anywhere, given the way you work. But given your familial commitments, you're here.
You go where you need to be. I mean, my wife needed to be here, and I needed to be with her, and so here I am.
And that is a common story, and we oftentimes forget that our needs are not just driven by our jobs, but often by our relationships.
And in fact, if you're living your life correctly, you let it be more driven by your relationships than your career.
I would agree.
So you would.
Howard brought along some comedy clips today because the theme, if you hadn't picked up already, of this show is humor and comedy. And we're going to start with a classic Woody Allen clip. Do you want to say anything before we start? Or
I'll set this up. This is called The Moose. It's one of two, I believe, perfect comedy routines. You can find this on you could have found this. It's out of print, so you can't find it now. On a collection called But Seriously, the American Comedy Box, which I produced for Rhino a long, long time ago now. 4-CD set on the history of American recorded comedy. And it is a brilliant routine, and I'll tell you a little bit more about it afterwards.
Driving home along the West Side Highway. But what I didn't realize was that the bullet did not penetrate the moose. It just creased his scalp, knocking him unconscious. And I'm driving through the Holland Tunnel, and the moose woke up. So I'm driving with a live moose on my fender, and the moose is signaling for a turn, you know? And there's a law in New York State against driving with a conscious moose on your fender Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And I'm very panicky, and then it hits me. Some friends of mine are having a costume party. I'll go, I'll take the moose, I'll ditch him at the party. It wouldn't be my responsibility. So I drive up to the party, and I knock on the door. The moose is next to me. My host comes to the door. I say, hello. You know the Solomons. We end up. The moose mingles. Did very well. Scored. Some guy was trying to sell him insurance for an hour and a half. 12 o'clock comes. They give out prizes for the best costume of the night. First prize goes to the Berkowitzes, a married couple dressed as a moose. The moose comes in second. The moose is furious. He and the Berkowitzes lock antlers in the living room. They knock each other unconscious. Now I figure here's my chance. I grab the moose, strap him to my fender, and shoot back to the woods. But I got the Berkowitzes. I'm driving along with two Jewish people on my fender. There's a law in New York State. Tuesdays, Thursdays, and especially Saturday. The following morning, the Berkowitzes wake up in the woods in a moose suit. Mr. Berkowitz is shot, stuffed, and mounted at the New York Athletic Club. And the joke is on them because it's restricted.
And there we have it, The Moose, Woody Allen.
By Woody Allen. That is a great routine. I hadn't realized when I sent it to you that he actually sets it up as being up here in upstate New York. Eric informed me during the break that there haven't been any huntable moose up here for 100 years. But it's comedy. It doesn't have to be factual. One of the interesting things, I believe that's off of the stand-up comedian album, but I'm not positive. Woody Allen put out like three albums, one of which is the same as the other two combined. And there was a point in time where he was trying to raise money. I think it was for What's Up, Tiger Lily. And in order to raise the money, he went back to Las Vegas and did some shows. But it had been so long since he did his routines, he didn't remember them. He had to learn them off of the records again in order to go perform them. But a great routine, and it's about hunting in upstate New York. How can you go wrong?
And do you want to say anything more about hunting in upstate New York as you are an upstate transplant now?
Well, I don't hunt, so there's that. Eric and I, let's be honest with the audience. Eric and I spent about an hour last week sitting down pre-interviewing me for this, and I assume what you're getting to is one of the points we talked about there. Eric's shrugging like, "Oh me! I mean, my butter wouldn't melt in his mouth over here."
Yeah, no. The idea was one of the things is you've got humor, and you've got a Woody Allen track that features, from my point of view, upstate New York. It sets it up in upstate with a very typically what I would call uninformed downstate point of view, not really knowing what they hunt upstate or who hunts with what kind of weapon. But anyway, it's a very funny routine. And I was wondering if you might use it as a segue into some of the disconnects between downstate and upstate.
That's where I thought we were going. But yeah, I am one of those uninformed downstate people who doesn't know a semi-automatic from an automatic, other than what I've read during recent legislative hearings. But I live in, I have married into and live with a family that does come from a hunting background. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I know downstate doesn't get at all, and one of the things I don't think even the Ithaca community gets, is that there is a difference. There are different Ithacas. There is a rural Ithaca and a more urban Ithaca. Now, the urban Ithaca isn't really urban, and the rural Ithaca isn't really rural, but they are less similar to each other than people think. Certainly downstate thinks there's one upstate, not just Ithaca, but you get past the Bronx and it's all the same thing. But up here, once you get into town, so to speak, amongst the Cornell and IC people and the folks who work there and work with them and all that, there's very little understanding that I've found that all you got to do is drive 10 minutes up 13, and I live a few blocks from sheep, and you see them. The first time I saw them, I was like, really? And yeah, really, there are sheep there. We are not a single community, and we don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And the predominance in the media and in the representation is for the urban side of Ithaca. And rural Ithaca, which has a lot of affinity for and connection with the South, I have said many times, the further north you go in New York State, the further south you get. Mm-hmm. It's the reverse of Florida. The doesn't, I mean, there are people who don't want to come to the Commons because it is too urban, let alone to New York City. This also was foreign to me. And I say this without judgment on the people. These are good people, both in urban and in rural Ithaca. But the two don't talk to each other much, or at least enough. And the two don't understand, no, I shouldn't say the two. Rural Ithaca knows about urban Ithaca. Urban Ithaca is the 6,000-pound gorilla in the room. But urban Ithaca doesn't really think about rural Ithaca a whole lot.
Right, or the 15,000 folks who commute into the county for jobs here mostly because they can't afford housing here, you know, and they know about Ithaca.
But that's a separate group altogether.
Yeah.
I'm talking about people who live in Tompkins County. Right. In fact, have, for the most part, lived in Tompkins County a lot longer than the folks who are living in urban Ithaca have.
Right.
You're talking about people who've been here for generations.
Right.
And, you know, have watched the urbanization or gentrification of parts of the city. And, you know, this is not unique to Ithaca. This has happened all over the country. But we tend to forget that it goes on up here because we have this image of this one community, you know, 10 square miles surrounded by reality. We got more than one sub-reality here within Ithaca.
In terms of the going north and going south thing, I think something happened in upstate New York in the 70s and 80s, and it happened, I know, in North Missouri. When I left Missouri in 76, there wasn't a southern accent in North Missouri, because we were close to where Harry Reasoner was from, and the Tonight Show host, what was his name back
then? Carson,
and Walter Cronkite. Get that right. And many others came from that band of Iowa, Nebraska, and North Missouri, where they perceived that there was not really much of an accent because their voices could travel universally. Well, what happened in this country was that there was a reaction against some of the activities of the 60s and the urban focus of the 60s, and there was a backlash of country music that took over the country, and people started speaking with southern accents and taking on kind of attributes of behavior that were very different. In part, as that reaction to what had been the focal point of the 60s, and I watched my classmates change the way they spoke by virtue of how they wanted to be politically identified in the course of those 10 years. It was bizarre. It was bizarre, and. And so I think, you know, there are some changes that almost go unremarked because they're not the focal point. Like urban Ithaca is focused on urban Ithaca. It doesn't notice rural Ithaca. I think same sort of thing happened across the country and then came back to bite us with Reagan and other kinds of more right-wing movement in the country.
Yeah, I mean, you would know the numbers better than I because I know you've studied the numbers. But my feeling is that a lot of the people who have moved to Ithaca, and especially those who've moved to Ithaca and occupied urban Ithaca, are people who had some relationship, either as students, faculty, or staff, usually at Cornell, perhaps at IC, especially as students, they stayed. I'm in the unusual position of having come here from outside, but not living in that part of Ithaca. And it gives me the opportunity, more than the ability, to see what's going on through eyes that are not just outside, but seeing it differently than most people do. Because if you're here as a student, you know, the fact that you are a student influences how you feel, and that affects how you see it even if you've stayed.
Right. Well, let me just preface it with another story, and then I want to get back, because the reason you are interesting is you've come here in a different way than many people come here.
Is that
here.
The only reason I'm interesting, Eric? Really?
Well. When I was here as an undergraduate in 1976 and 77, I eventually took a leave of absence from Cornell, and I drove a pickup truck that had a steel beam as a front bumper. And I continued to live with college students because I was figuring out how to kind of, because I came from a kind of a poor rural background. I was not prepared for Cornell. I needed a year off to sort it out. And I wanted to live with college students who were from Larchmont and the suburbs of New York City and New Jersey, Westchester. And I watched how they lived. One of the things I noticed was that when I was driving around town, if I did something stupid like, you know, rolled a stop sign or was speeding, I didn't get a ticket. because I looked like a local yokel and I talked like a local yokel. But these students from New York, they always got ticketed. You know, it was like the cops had made sport on these students. So they saw, and that has changed. The police force has become much more sensitive to those kinds of issues because it couldn't work across that divide. There have been a number of issues that have had to be kind of played through during the year. But when you come here as an appendage to a local person, and my closest friends here were rural people, mainly from the Adirondack Mountain areas or from rural farm areas, 30, 40 miles from here when I was an undergrad. So I got to see the similar sort of vantage point that you do. But it is a different point. It is a different place. And you know, we've grown 5,000 to 10,000 people a year since 1950. We're the only upstate New York county that has had that kind of population. Every 10 years, we have that kind of population addition. Now, the rate of growth is going down, but the rate of people commuting in is skyrocketing, mm-hmm. Because we haven't been building housing for people. But you have managed to come in and have a family system built from generations of people who've been here.
And a very nice family system. Yeah. I mean, I came into a family that is very different politically than I am, but wonderful people. I mean, warm, loving people, accepting people. And, you know, folks that, you know, urban Ithaca doesn't think about. I mean, not out of any malice, but because if you're here as part of IC or Cornell, then the folks on the other side of Warren Road on 13 aren't really part of what you're all about. And there's nothing that brings you into that community, and to a lesser degree, vice versa.
Mm-hmm. So what does that mean in terms of politics, in terms of community?
Well, in terms of politics, it's actually very significant. Ithaca proper, you know, where we are sitting right now in the WRFI studios, you know, is very liberal, very left-wing, relatively speaking. We elect Democrats. We elect liberal Democrats. Tompkins County, overall, and upstate New York generally, going back to the Senate race, very Republican, very conservative. In my race, I spent 3% of the money and got 30% of the vote. The reality is nobody, including me, thought I was going to win this race. You don't beat a 13-term incumbent on $13,000 when he has a $500,000. So that wasn't the point. The point was to have him be opposed and have some issues discussed. Mm-hmm. And that worked pretty well. But in Tompkins County, we didn't have the whole of Tompkins County. We had all of 2 counties and parts of 7 others. It's 3.5 hours from one end of the district to the other.
This is a state senate. It's that big.
Right. Yeah. It was hand-drawn by the incumbent to get him elected. That's what redistricting is all about. But it is drawn to keep the conservative areas in, and you can have little bits of Tompkins, even liberal, because it's balanced by everything else. We had Groton, Dryden, Danby, and Caroline, mm-hmm. were in our district. And we came very close. We came within a few hundred votes of winning the Tompkins County part. Mm-hmm. We won Ulster County. I still am not entirely sure why. And we lost miserably in most of the other mm-hmm. counties. In Herkimer County, I think we lost by 20,000 votes. Mm-hmm. But it is a different political environment up here. And that is one of the things that New York City and the suburbs do not get about upstate New York. I had a fundraiser downstate because that's where the money is and that's where the people with money that I know were. And one of the things I said to them was, you know, you don't understand upstate New York. You think it's just like you, but with trees. And it's not. It is a different world view. Mm-hmm. It's a valid worldview. I don't question anybody's, you know, right to view the world as they do, but it is much more like a Southern worldview than it is like a New York City urban worldview.
Or just a rural worldview.
That might be even a better way to put it, yeah. And I don't think that the folks downstate get that.
And what is that rural? What is, you know, what's the disconnect? What's the worldview? What are the two worldviews?
I mean, I haven't been here long enough to feel like I'm qualified to actually judge that or even state that. But it's much more a version of a regular version of patriotism and religion, the kind that you get on TV. And I don't say that disparagingly. I mean the kind that it's portrayed as an American patriotism, mm-hmm. as opposed to my view of patriotism, which is if you see something you don't like, question it, yell at it, and try and change it, mm-hmm. Even if that means jumping up and down and pointing at it and saying the emperor has no clothes. Whereas the type of patriotism you have here is a much more the government is supposed to be doing it's a more conservative view of the world, even a little more libertarian view of the world, and that's the interesting line, is it's not, as no place in America actually is, right versus left. I mean we simplify it that way, but it doesn't actually work that way. There is libertarian, which plays on both sides. There's stereotypic views, which work on both sides. And there's genuine feeling that the world isn't as good as it once was. It's a more more nostalgic view of for a world that may never have existed, but we've portrayed it on television. As opposed to the liberal side, which is a more stereotypic view of a world that could be, even though it's never really existed.
Right. And we're also getting some demographic differences, because in these outlying areas, the populations are substantially older than in Ithaca or in the cities, and where we have younger populations, and generally people who are younger tend to be more change-oriented, more optimistic, and older people tend to be more conservative and more, even if they're liberal, they tend to pace of change to go slower and be more rationalized.
And one of the points that I raised on the campaign trail, in fact, is a huge segment of the childbearing population of this area, and my district in general, has left this area.
Right.
We are aging, as a community, faster, I think, than any other area in the state, and it's going on at an increasing rate.
All of the school districts in the county and beyond are losing child-aged population.
Right. People are going where there are jobs be had.
Right.
And that has great implications for the future of any area that has that going on.
Right.
Both in terms of who's the next generation coming up, costs in terms of health care that are going to be coming up, support services that are needed. And it's an issue people are not talking about. And one of the issues I tried to raise on the campaign trail, because it's one that's accelerating.
Let's switch to another comedy track that you had supplied.
And but we've been so funny so far, Erica.
Yes, that's true. That's true. odd in the funny sort of sense. This track is a piece that you characterized as one of the two perfect comedy routines.
Oh, we're going with those first. Yeah, this is Who's On First. A routine that pretty much everybody knows in one short form or another. It's a baseball routine. It's perhaps the best of all baseball routines. Bud Abbott and Lou Costello, two people who didn't particularly like each other but worked together beautifully. And it probably doesn't need any setup.
Yeah.
I mean, people know what it is. Just push the button.
Well, Costello, I'm going to New York with you. You know, Bucky Harris, the Yanks manager, gave me a job as coach for as long as you're on the team. Look at it. If you're a coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but strange it may seem to give these ballplayers nowadays very peculiar names.
Funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
Brother Daffy.
Daffy Dean.
And their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean, oh, I see. Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach, too?
Yes.
Do you know the fellow's name?
Oh, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name?
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first base.
Who?
The guy playing
first.
Who
is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell
That's
me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Well, you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy that gets the
That's
money.
That's it.
Who gets the money on
he
first
base? He does, every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. What's wrong with that?
Look, what I want to know is when you sign up the first baseman, how does he sign his name to
Who?
The contract? The guy.
Who?
How does he sign his
That's
name?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
What's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, that'll change the play.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
What's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about it.
Now, how did I get on third base?
Why, you mentioned his name.
If I mentioned a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on third?
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again. Who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
Oh, what is on second?
You don't want who on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know. Third base! You got outfield?
Sure.
The outfielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Now tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of here, you infield! What's the guy's name in left field?
What is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on
first.
I don't know.
So it's worth it?
Yeah.
My hope is that they're
Look, you got a pitcher on the team. What's the pitcher's name?
Tamara.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you
that. Go ahead.
Tamara.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow? You got to tell me who's pitching.
Valesha, who is not pitching?
I'll break your arm, you say. Who's on first? I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know.
I've got to record this twice because this recording is sending me the sound isn't so good.
Today. Tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
All we got is a couple of
so
things.
I need to figure out how to come off the plate.
I think you better play through some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team and a heavy hitter. Now, the heavy hitter bunched the ball. When he bunched the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
I know you have to do.
It's a throw the ball at first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally? Naturally. Well, I pick up the ball and I throw it to
Naturally. No, you don't.
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I say.
You're not saying
it. I throw the ball naturally.
You throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
You asked me.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now, you asked me.
That was Abbott and Costello with a few additions as we pulled it off of YouTube.
Oh, well, we shouldn't admit that. But, yeah, I mean, we didn't quite get to the end of that, but, you know, everybody else has added to the Who's on First routine. Credibility Gap did one with rock star names. Let's see, who do they have? They had Yes, the Guess Who, and the Who. Hudson and Landry did one where they basically did a similar routine and then at the end acknowledged they'd stolen the routine. It's a wonderful routine. It's incredibly flexible. It dawns on me, I haven't given our audience, such as it is at this hour on a Sunday morning, my comedy credentials, which I probably should.
Well, yeah.
As to why we're doing all this comedy, which will also be part, I should point out, of my version of Mission Radio on alternate Fridays. Others play music, and I'll do that as well, but I will also be playing comedy. I have been doing radio for over 30 years in one form or another, sometimes on one side of the microphone, sometimes on the other. I started at the Columbia radio station, WKCR. I shouldn't do that. That would be a legal ID. And that would really, really confuse the FCC. One of the shows I did there was called The Laugh Track, which was a weekly radio comedy show, either an hour or a half hour, depending on the term. And sometimes they would even turn me loose for 24 hours to do an April Fool's Day comedy marathon. As I think I referred to earlier, But Seriously, the American Comedy Box on Rhino is something I produced. I've produced a few other comedy routines, records, CDs. I produced a Bob Newhart CD. It's actually a vast overstatement of what I did, but they called me the producer that got a Grammy nomination. I did a kids' version of Laugh Track at one point called Laugh Track Junior with kids' records, stories, comedy routines, whatever. I've even done stand-up comedy. The hardest form of performing that there is. It's the reason they call it performing naked from the waist up. And it's something I have always loved. The first record I ever owned was Homer and Jethro at the Country Club, bought for me when I was 6 years old by my grandmother. Completely inappropriate for a six-year-old. Not that it was dirty or anything, it's just beyond my understanding. My parents owned some of the Alan Sherman records. I grew up listening to those. I now own several thousand comedy records of my own, which I, if my wife lets me, I will be pulling out of storage and using on Mission Radio.
On Mission Radio, every other Friday.
Every other Friday, four to five.
Yes, yes, yes. Good. You had talked about the the worldview of upstate New York compared to the worldview of downstate New York. I think there are probably multiple worldviews having
There's
grown up.
Multiple right here in Ithaca,
yeah, right.
As we
and,
said.
And one of the tensions, and I'm tempted to say we live in an era of fantasy politics because
it's not like fantasy baseball.
Well, you know, yeah, because in some ways, the big issues are posed as almost like we could do away with the government, or we could defund government, or we could completely wipe it off the map as though that were actually a viable solution, or we could have programs that would solve all our ills, which would be supplied by the government.
That's the Ronald Reagan line, the nine scariest words in the human language: I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Yes, well, there's that, but there's also the play that we have to do something, and one of the issues in the fantasy politics world is also the kind of the forgetting that human beings are a weed species.
Okay, I feel like we've switched roles. So, Eric, what do you mean by that?
No, in a certain sense, we did. By a weed species, every environment human beings have ever moved into, they've destroyed. And that's gone on for tens of thousands of years. And our political process now doesn't quite recognize that we probably don't want to accelerate that with more fracking and stuff like this. What I'm trying to get at is, how can we use humor? And I've been thinking this weekend, and you're coming on the show, how can we use humor to kind of humanize some of these issues where we get pretty righteous about either our ability to restore or preserve the environment, which is something we have a 100,000-year track record of never having really successfully done, and also not continue to kind of wantonly destroy it with hydrofracking or other practices that are incredibly risky. How could we use humor to get at some of these issues?
What a great question. It's been done multiple times. I go back to Mel Brooks. When in doubt, always go back to Mel Brooks. He's the distinction of having directed my favorite and least favorite movies of all time. But Mel Brooks...
Do you want to say which of those before we move on?
The Producers, the original version, is my favorite. And Life Stinks is my least favorite. Okay. Stuart Klein on Channel 5 in New York reviewed Life Stinks by saying, "Life stinks, stinks. Back to you." That was his whole review. But Mel Brooks, when once asked why he spends so much time doing humor about Hitler, as he does, took the position, and he phrased it better than I will, that the way you defang a person or an issue is not by railing against them, but by making them the butt of the joke, by making them such that people laugh when they think about them. Brooks did that with Hitler, who was already gone by the time he was doing it, so it wasn't much of a challenge. But the artist, Thomas Nast, was that the artist? Not Ogden Nash, he's the poet, but the one who did the cartoons of Tammany Hall and such. Gary Trudeau with Doonesbury does that. Kelly with Pogo did that. The Capitol Steps do it, but they're nonpartisan. They do it both ways, and we have one of their tracks in here someplace. But one of the things that can be done, I think, using humor, is to use it to point up the ridiculousness of your opponent's position. Now, unfortunately, it can be done probably by everybody on every side of an issue, because we're all ridiculous in one way or another. Comedy tends to be more liberal. Not exclusively so, but people who are on the conservative side tend to not be humorless. I very good conservative friends who have great senses of humor.
But they're not comedians.
But they're not comedians because humor, by its nature, is kind of anarchistic. And conservatism, by its nature, is not.
Right.
Now that's and there are lots of non-political comedians. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tend towards, despite the tracks we've played so far, towards the political comedians myself. When I was doing stand-up, I was doing, you know, current events, politics, and political song parodies. But the nature of comedy, the nature of getting people to laugh, is surprising them, is putting them in a slightly uncomfortable situation. That's a different kind of laughter, and that is a more anarchistic, mm-hmm. ergo liberal, you know, thing to do. But, you know, you again, the country comedians, some of whom I named earlier in the show, you know, that is a more conservative vein of comedy that does exist out there.
Right, and even the If You Might Be a Redneck If, series stuff is not so much about liberals laughing at rednecks as rednecks are laughing at themselves.
Right, and the ability to laugh at yourself. Is great. I mean, George Carlin made no qualms about taking on liberals mm-hmm. as well as anybody else, and, you know, showing those of us who label ourselves that way that we're as ridiculous as anybody else is, and of course we are.
Right. Right, and one of the things that was, but the reason I started this with Will Rogers was that he got death threats from gangsters and threats from politicians and stuff because he took everybody on. He had a generous heart. I never met a man I didn't like,
mm-hmm.
but he also had a fairly conservative and sharp mind and a lot of anarchic. I mean, you got to be on top of things to catch the telling detail. And to play with it, and he did, and he spoke to a conservative section of the country and a liberal section at the same time, which, you know, it's hard, as you're just saying. It seems to be more balanced to one side than the other. Let's go to your track from the
Capitol Steps.
Yes, the Capitol Steps.
This is one of the ones, since I was picking the tracks, that takes on the right rather than takes on the left. For those who don't know, because of all the tracks I pulled in, the Capitol Steps are probably the least known, though they have played the State Theater here in Ithaca. They are a group of former congressional aides, at least that's how they started, I'm not sure everybody mm-hmm. there is now, who originally got together for a congressional Christmas party doing song parodies, poking fun at their bosses and the government and politics. They found there was a market for it. Mm-hmm. They're now an ongoing group and have been around for 30 years. Give or take, and the track we're about to hear is called "The Loonies of the Right." It's a parody of from Phantom of the Opera, "The Music of the Night." They rewrite their songs frequently, so I don't remember exactly which version this is, but I think it's funny. Hopefully, other people will too.
Okie doke.
Say I'm insensitive, I'll cry. My that I am quite orange. I just realized nothing rhymes with orange. So now I'll tell the truth. I don't use a tanning booth to look like steak that's overcooked a tad. The fact is that I'm really Snorky's dad.
The Capitol steps and the loonies on the right.
Loonies of the right.
Of the right. Of the right, sorry.
Yeah, I love the steps. As I said earlier, when I was doing stand-up, I did political song parodies as well, only not as good as they do.
Now, how can a comedian take a posture to... Is there anybody out there now who can, in one routine, take everybody in the room down of any political... across the board, is there anybody out there who has that capacity these days?
Well, I mean, capacity, sure. I mean, on a good night, Bill Maher can do it, although he tends to run more towards the liberal side. But, you know, depending on the issue, you know, he'll take liberals on, too. I find Bill Maher very funny. Who else? Well, first off, there are a lot of non-political comedians out there. I mean, Cosby... who's still out there performing.
Right.
You know, I think he's somebody who reaches everybody.
That I would say, yes.
He's not political, overtly. He is and has been quite social, I think I would say, more than political, in a variety of issues. But, you know, you set out rural separately, and I'm not sure how much he reaches rural America.
Actually, he does, because, I mean, it's because he's not... beating urban issues exclusively. He's presenting human conundrums, like you say, social issues.
And my wife and I were listening to some of his stuff last night. Interesting, we listened to a very early routine of his, Noah, and then a much later routine of his, The Dentist, both of which are hysterical. But you could see how he had changed over the years. He was obviously much more comfortable by the time he was doing The Dentist, which is, you know, a hysterical 6 minutes and 47 seconds.
Right, and in these routines, some of them which you've shared with me, there are biblical references where they're really having fun with biblical imagery. And that's kind of, we've become kind of stiff and kind of, it's become difficult to do that. Not just...
Less so? No, I've got to disagree on that.
No?
When David Steinberg... was doing that as a genre of comedy. Mm-hmm. He was doing these mock sermons, taking on religious figures and all that. CBS would not let him do those on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour in the late 60s. In fact, he was banned by CBS from doing that. Now at least you can do it.
Right. Okay. Okay.
So, you know, I think there's a pendulum. I mean, there was a point in time where that was very popular. I think there may have been some pushback by certain elements of society. Elements is a terrible word. It sounds like, you know, like there's...
conspiracy theories.
Yeah, right, which
stuff.
Is not what I mean at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Certain segments of
the
population.
Right.
But generally, it is something that you can do without any real repercussions for doing it these days. Bill Maher does it all the time.
You're taking on this show, Mission Radio, 1 hour every other week, and that may develop. What are you hoping to do with that hour specifically? What are you hoping to hold up for Ithaca and Watkins Glen to experience?
First up, not priority one, inform. I mean, I am pompous enough to think that I can help inform the community in terms
about
of news, current events, affairs. I mean, the show is going to be a whole variety of stuff. Politics, government, culture, by which I mean high culture and low culture. Mm-hmm. You know, I love Broadway and I love comic books.
What you've called rural Ithaca and urban Ithaca culture, too?
No, I'm not. That's not how I'd break it down.
Yeah.
I'm sure there are people in both segments that read comic books
and people in both
who hate Broadway, although I love it. But, you know, TV as well as movies. But also... you know, interesting people, discussions with interesting people who have something to say. I have one guest lined up for this Friday. will be Brett Bossard, who's just taken over running Cinemopolis after being executive director of the Community Arts Project. Brett is an interesting person and a fun person, and my expectations, we'll talk not just about Cinemopolis, but about movies and culture generally. He's somebody who loves radio as I do. I have an invite out to the mayor. If you're listening, Mr. Mayor, I'm waiting to hear from you to see if you'll be on Friday. But we'll also, you know, hopefully be doing interviews with some of the people who come through town, playing the state, or, you know, or directors who are coming in for Cornell Cinema or for Cinemopolis. People who aren't coming in, we can do phone interviews. We have this wonderful new technology called the telephone, and it does work.
And it even works here on a 30-year-old board.
It's the interesting thing about the 30-year-old board is it looks just like the boards I used to use when I was doing radio on a regular basis. It makes me feel at home. But, I mean, I also have, you know, through my entertainment law practice and all that, I have friends and contacts throughout the world. We'll try and bring some of those in. We'll try and play both music and comedy that relate to the issues we're talking about to give people yet another perspective on it. And we'll also have news summaries as well and public service announcements and events. And the show will hopefully evolve as we do it. My goal is for it to be informative and for it to be fun. But of course, that's what everybody says about their radio shows. We'll see how well I do doing it.
Right. Now, would you like to, we have a Newhart clip and we have a Carlin clip. Would you like to pick up one of those before we move,
call it a day? Well, why not? Let's see, especially on the time that we have. Looks to me like the Carlin will play better. For people who've been with the station a long time, I will point out that it's called Wonderful Wino, even though we don't have Wino anymore. It broke my heart when I found out we didn't have Wino because of the Carlin routine.
Right.
It is from the album AM-FM. It's on the AM side of it. It's his version of an AM DJ.
Right, and we are WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and we've been talking with Howard Lieb, who will be hosting Mission Radio 4 to 5 every other Friday afternoon, 4 to 5 p.m.
Thanks so much, Eric.
Hi there, kids. Welcome to the Willie West Show here on Wonderful Wino Radio. Welcome to the Willie West. You're here in the wonderful ways. You get the weird one. It's been a Willie West winging away with 101 Wild and Willie Wedges of Wax and Quazy Wagons of Boy on the Radio. Right here on Wonderful Wino. Wonderful Wino. 1750 on your dial, just above the police calls, kids. We got stacks and stacks of wax and wax. We got to pick the click, the ones to watch, the oldies but goodies and oldies but goodies. We got the top 700 records here in the world. A wonderful line, a wonderful line. Well, let's get started with big rock and sound now. That great new group from England, the Kansas City Boys. Let's hear them. My baby's dead.
Ring, ding, ring, ding, 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 ding.
My baby's dead. Dude. She got hit by a train. Dude. Big old train. I'm gonna get that train. Hey, this kid's another big romantic ballad for you. And you heard it right here on Wonderful Wino. Wonderful Wino. That was by Danny and the Dressmakers, one of the great new groups around. And that's their third million seller this week. Okay, let's move along. Two in a row, a big double play in the Weird Willie West Show for you. Another tune here. This one's brand new, hasn't even been released yet. It's number one on the charts this week. Next week, it'll be a golden oldie. Let's hear it.
I sent my sinuses to Arizona. I sent my liver to Peru. I sent my lungs and my kidney for the summer to Sydney. But I'm sending my heart to you.
Another big romantic ballad, and you heard it right here on Wonderful Wino. Wonderful
Bulletin, 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 Bulletin.
Here is a Bulletin, Bulletin, Bulletin. The sun did not come up this morning. Huge cracks have appeared in the Earth's surface, and big rocks are falling out of the sky. Details 25 minutes from now on Action Central News Another big tune for you, kids. Moving right along with one of the big sounds. This is, we're going to set out some dedications. It's number one this week. Top of the heap, cream of the crop, pick of the pack. Number one and moving higher all the time. Got a few great cool calls on the boss line. We're going to set out some dedications. Big Al, Red, Louie, Spike, Choo Choo, Spanish Anna, Dirty Mary, Nick the Greek, Baby Carlos, Junior, Pee Wee, Toots, Papa, Spot, Greasy Creek, Woozy, Mush, Ralph and Brucey. Hey, man. And it's our pick to make you sick, Jenny. Wee. Jenny! Another big romantic ballad for you, and you heard it right here on Wonderful Wino. Wonderful Wino in Western Walla Walla. Another big tune. This one's been on the charts for 2.5 years. It's just starting to make the big move this week. Last week it was number 215. This week, zooming up to the big number 212 spot, a folk protest song by Danny and the Demonstrators. Don't want no war. Don't want no war. Don't want no war. Don't want no war. Don't want no job, neither. You heard it right here on Wonderful Wine. And speaking of romance, kids, where are you going to be going this weekend with that date of yours? Why not go on out to the Makeout Drive-In Theater? Hey, you like it out there? No lines, no waiting. There's no movie either, kid. No, of course, they've got a great Technicolor Teen Toon Fest for you. A great flick to click out there this week on the 6 of your super favorite stars, Sandra Dee, Peggy Lee, Brenda Lee, Bobby V, Molly B, and Oscar Homolka. In Sex Bed Teen Bikini Virgin Surf Beach Ball Bash. Don't miss it. 117 of your favorite songs included. Okay, kids, that just about wraps up here in the Weird Willie West Show on a Wonderful Wednesday. We'll catch you again tomorrow on a Thumping Thursday if someone doesn't bomb the station. But in the meantime, we got the old tunes, the new tunes, the show tunes, the blue tunes, the greatest music in town. But we never play it!
And that was George Carlin and the Wonderful Wino Routine, recorded in Detroit, in a live show in Detroit, and released on an album in the mid '60s. Anyway, so we've been talking with Howard Lieb, who will be hosting Mission Radio every other Friday afternoon from 4 to 5, using music and humor and to share his thoughts on news and politics and culture in this region. And the next hour we're going to be welcoming Gordon Wagner, a local resident who has spent many years doing development work in Africa. We're going to learn a little bit about his life and his work and his motivations in doing development and his concerns, what he's learned from 30 years experience in the field and before that about 30 years teaching, or 20 years teaching. Okay.